What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast Shoulder Evaluation Tips and Tricks. I got Mike Chamberlain, Barbara Wilson will be joining us soon. Mike is a physical therapist from Houston Methodist. He's also a graduate of Houston Baptist University, my alma mater. So we got Huskies right here. So we're going to be talking about shoulder evaluation. We talked in the last one about shoulder anatomy, and so we carried a little bit of the evaluation into that one just because it's so hard to separate. And I'm sure that we're going to talk some about the rehab or the exercises as we're dealing with the evaluation. We're going to cover some of the anatomy as well. And so again, these three, we're talking about the shoulder and tips and tricks, weird stuff, kind of a review. And so Bubba just walked in. Of course, you know Bubba. And so I'm your host, Jeremy Jackson. This podcast is specifically sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/shoulder evaluation. Again, shoulder evaluation. So without much further ado, again, as we're looking at the general shoulder evaluation considerations, you can never look at just the shoulder. There's so many more things. One of the podcasts I did a long time ago with Mike McKinney and Josh Ogden over at Baylor, and Mike is in Northeastern University in Boston, we were talking about bicep tendonitis. But they're like, did you look at the hip or the back? And I'm like, what are you talking about? And so there's so many different things you have to consider that it's not just the shoulder. And actually, Mike and I were talking about this beforehand. There was like a softball pitcher that was having problems. So as we discuss the shoulder, remember that everything is connected. Okay. You guys ready?
Yep.
Mike, welcome to the show. And Mike is going to take it away. Go ahead, Mike.
So one of the questions that was asked was about the test, the special test, and their names, and are they important clinically? My answer is kind of it depends. You know, kind of talking between therapists and athletic trainers, yeah. If they say they got positive on this test, I need to know that test. But it also gets kind of hairy, especially with the shoulder. A lot of the tests kind of put you in the same position, and depending upon which way you push, pull, or rotate the arm, you know, passively, yeah, I mean, that's going to tell you some information, but the name of the test doesn't necessarily matter. It's more about knowing mechanics of the joint, anatomy, and what you're trying to achieve with that motion. So it just depends. You know, I get bogged down in names of tests, and I have to constantly go back and look. There's just so many different test names. What about you?
I'm glad I could make it. Murphy's Law was in effect. A wreck. You got to know about this because it was nice. Police chase overnight. The guy went the wrong way down the freeway, wrecked. He died. They had the freeway shut down, which means that you couldn't get from the Beltway onto I-10. So that meant the Beltway was backed up. 59 was backed up for a different wreck if I wanted to go an alternate route. Then I get through all that, and then a truck rear-ended a trailer right there trying to get this way. So, yeah, my normal 35 minutes took me an hour and a half. But anyway, I'm with you. I don't know all the tests. There's a new test every week that comes up, you know, or a variant of a test. This is the such-and-such test part three. I'm like, I don't know. I mean, you know, and so people make up tests to try to get their name on them. But I think you've got to know the basics. And if you're talking about, I mean, we're just throwing out relocation tests. I think we all know that test. That's fairly simple to do. And you don't have to figure out how much is it sliding. Is it painful? Yeah, okay, it's positive. But where it gets touchy for me is manual muscle testing. My 3 out of 5 is your 4 out of 5, and it's Jeremy's 2 out of 5. And so that becomes problematic there, where you look at him and go, I don't think you're that weak. And he goes, man, they're weak. They, you know, so how I interpret that versus how you interpret that gets a little dicey at times. I think we just need to know they're weak. You know, I don't know that. Would it be nice to have a handheld dynamometer and put some numbers to it? Sure, but they're weak. They're weak. They're painful. And we know, I can't remember the research paper now, but we know in an overhead athlete, once they – start getting shoulder pain, they probably lost 25% of their cuff strength already. For that to occur, And so they're even, you know, so once it's really painful, they're probably really down there strength-wise. But, again, I don't know all the test names. I try to figure out where in that roadmap we're trying to go, do those tests specific to that area, and hopefully figure some answers out.
Yeah, and so then the next part was asking kind of about just a normal routine of what do we look at during the exam, and got quite a bit of notes here because there's just so much to look at it. You know, when we talk about what's causing the pain, so it all starts with the history. I mean, the history is gonna guide you to what you choose to look at and what you can kind of rule out instantly, and just some different tips on different pain generators, right? Tendons, you know, they're going to be painful when you wake up, start moving around, they're going to be painful, but then the more you move, they loosen up, pain kind of goes away. So you got your pitcher that's like, you know, hurts to throw when I start, but as I start throwing and get into the game, feels pretty good. After the game, it's going to tighten back up, pain's going to come back on. And then also, especially with our younger guys, you know, they're trying to gain some weight, put on some muscle. When they have the delayed onset muscle soreness, you know, that is technically a part of tendinopathy, right? But it's we have to fight that. What is pathological versus what's our adaptation? You know, we don't want them to go do a leg workout and not be able to sit down on the toilet for the next 4 days. You know, things like that. And that's technically a degenerative or a reactive tendon. Labrum, right? We're looking at pain throughout activity. Big complaints you're going to hear is, you know, I just can't hit the strike zone. Like I throw and I have strength. There's some pain there, but I'm not accurate.
Or my velocity's off, or I can't. Late cocking hurts.
Yeah. I also get the mechanical symptoms too. They'll get the popping, clicking throughout there.
Right, if they go nuclear loose on you and they don't know where it's going, you're like, all right, bank card. That's really, like, I don't know where it's going. All right, you got a bank card. Let's go. You know, you don't need much in the way of tests, really, but you got to do it.
Right, yeah. And then impingement is actually kind of my favorite, our bread and butter, right? You know, there's no specific issues. The only thing I hear is anterior pain a lot, so right there in the front of the shoulder, and then just painful with positioning, so not necessarily just throwing or anything like that. One thing that causes it, just anything overhead is painful. Just reaching, weights, throwing, reaching up to, you know, grab something off the wall, anything. Some other pain generators we'll not necessarily touch on, but is obviously the nerve. I know y'all hit on thoracic outlet, checking out the C-spine last week, and then the bursa. Bursa is pretty easy though. It'll swell up like a softball there on the shoulder, so you can just kind of look at it and see it.
You know, one of the things when you talked about history, I think part of history is you got to look at what, if you're evaluating me, what is my posture while I'm sitting there? Am I forward, rounded shoulders? Okay, and I'm talking about anterior shoulder pain. Impingement's a possibility,
sure.
Right? Because I'm already looking at, you're looking at me going, his posture sucks. All right, so he's probably got X, Y, Z going on as you're listening to my history. I mean, that history is so important, but also that looking while you're taking that history, not the examination part, but looking at them. How did they walk in? You know, I mean, you take a patient in the clinic, hey, come on back. You're watching, if it's a knee, you're watching them walk, right? What's their gait like? What else are they doing? You're picking up cues right there. When they say, well, that's a little sore, well, yeah, it should be, because you look like hell over here doing this. You know, I mean, all those things matter, and it the nonverbal, if you can pick it up, helps tremendously, but they'll probably have told you in the conversation of the history what is going on already. You know, again, like I said, like we talked about, I can't hit the strike zone. Okay, Bankart went to the top of the list. You know, I can't do this. Well, it could be this. You're getting a differential diagnosis, but if I'm listening and looking, I got a pretty good idea before we even lay hands on them.
Right, definitely.
All right, so kind of, again, to interrupt your flow there, Mike. So, Bubba, you're talking
about,
yeah. So you're talking about, you know, watching them walk. And so at what point in your evaluation you ask the questions and then you talk, and then do you say, okay, well, let me see you go through a throwing motion, or let's go over, you know, if you have the facility, okay, well, let's go throw some pitches, right? So at what point do you move? Is it after all those questions? after the hit, tell me what's happening, where's it hurting, put a, you know, I always say put point, show me with one finger, because these kids will grab, okay, this whole, well, which finger are you talking about?
It hurts.
So yeah, yeah, show me with one finger the spot that hurts the most. So as Bubba was talking about, you're watching them walk. Well, you can't really do that with the shoulder unless
you
you're just watching your, are they holding it here? Are they not swinging it?
How'd they get up on the table? If it's if it's a male, can they take, you let them take their shirt off? You know, as I'm asking, as you're asking the question to me, if I'm like this, you're getting a pretty good idea of what problems I've got already, right?
Yeah.
So all that goes in there. I think, yes, there's a place for throwing. I don't think I'm going to do that before we evaluate you, you know, but we may do that to look at some things. I'm not a biomechanist. I couldn't go, hey, you know, but we can get some quick and dirty stuff out of that. Okay. But how do they, you know, my wrist hurts. Okay, let's get up on the table. And they get up on the table like, your wrist don't hurt, dude. You're trying to get out of practice, right? You get a lot of information out of that, just trying to get them to do things. And we've got to go through our range of motion. So you're going to see a lot of that already before we even check strength or instability or whatever else.
Yeah, and actually the question you were talking about, right, the one finger, that's a big indicator too. You know, that one finger anterior pain, it hurts here. That's a lot different than saying, well, it's just kind of the whole back of my shoulder hurt. That's another big indicator with the subjective as well. But then after all those questions, yeah, I'm looking at range of motion usually first, seeing kind of their active motion. How are they willing to move? You know, passively, that's how far it can go. But I want to see how much they're willing to move. But then also early on, I do like to do something functional. So we're not going to just get up and throw. But I like to see kind of their wind up, especially if they're a pitcher, how they throw. We have a little foam ball that sometimes we'll have them toss and kind of wear in the throw if they can't recall. But a lot of times if they're having pretty regular pain for a while, they're going to tell you exactly when in their mechanics. Does it hurt? You know, does it hurt on deceleration, that cocking phase? They usually have that down by the time they see us, so we don't have to really, we don't want to provoke it first thing, and then, you know, now everything we do is painful throughout the eval. But then, yeah, so moving on into the exam, right, we're looking at active motion. The big thing is, with them, is the external internal range of motion. So GERD is a big thing right now. It's kind of controversial. From what I got in school, we're not really using it if they're an overhead thrower, just because we expect to see that.
Look at more total arc of motion.
We're looking at total arc.
Yeah.
Actually, I can't remember the study exactly, but they were saying to decrease stress to the shoulder joint and the elbow, we actually want our pitchers to have 120 degrees of external rotation, which is just automatically going to put us in GERD if they have that full 180 total arc. And then the other big thing too is when we're measuring to monitor the scapula and the shoulder blade, right? So as they're going into internal, a lot of guys can drop it all the way down to the mat, but that shoulder girdle pops up.
Right.
We're actually no longer getting internal rotation. We're getting anterior tipping of the scapula.
You got to stabilize that with your motion check. And
definitely, yeah. Definitely. Yeah. And we were doing some screens down in one of the Clear Creek ISD schools for their baseball team. And pretty regularly, our range of motions, we were seeing anywhere from 110 to 125 external, but then our internals were 40 to 55. So yeah, we haven't hit that total arc, right? So there is some mobility need there, but we just don't want to go cranking them into internal rotation, because that actually has kind of a negative effect on their throwing motion, instead of just picking that easy fruit, saying, well, they're lacking internal, let's get them some internal and move on. That's not necessarily the best thing for these guys.
So let me jump to 2 weeks from now, just because it just piqued my interest. So you just talked about, you know, mobility issues and the scapula. How much thoracic mobility work do you do with these guys in the overhead athlete?
Quite a bit.
I was going to say, I think it's probably one of the most underutilized things and overlooked. Sure. You know, I mean – I'm guilty of it. I look at, oh, we got to clear the C spine. We got to do this. And then I'm going, oh, we got to work rotator cuff, scapular stabilization. We got to do this. Oh, damn, we didn't do any thoracic mobility, and he still can't. You know, right. And so it's a matter of reminding yourself we got to add some of that in. And I don't want to hijack, you know, eval to go. But it just, when you said it, it went, you know. Yeah, Well, and Jeremy touched on it too. You got to realistically, it doesn't matter if it's an overhead athlete or a football lineman. You've got to look at the ground up and back again, you know, because it is a kinetic chain. And you know, I mean, so why are we having these shoulder problems? Well, what's our hip mobility? Right. You know, I mean, I don't have hip mobility, so I have to adapt. You know, again, we know the forces of a ulnar collateral ligament get exceeded every time you throw a ball, so everything else has to be functioning well. So if our hip mobility sucks and we can't really rotate, so now something else is going to take the brunt of it. So now we have to adapt. Well, it's probably going to be the elbow or the shoulder. You know, so I mean, we have, and we get so excited. Go, oh, we got to look at this. Well, you've got to look at that, but then you've also got to come back out, step back a couple of steps, and look at some other things, and make sure that is the only reason, and it's not something downstream or upstream that's causing that issue.
Oh yeah, I promise we're talking about the shoulder here, but watching the Astros in the playoffs versus the Red Sox, Lance McCullers Jr., he's a curveball pitcher. He's not going to have Tommy John surgery. Right. And so if you watch when he came back from the DL, like it looked like, as you were talking about the mobility, the hip mobility or whatever, it looked like that he would always over twist his body and then pull back and then bring his arm up. It was almost like he was trying to remind himself to create that twisting
rotation
motion with his core, with his hips or whatever first. Maybe he was doing that before, but I just noticed afterwards it was kind of like that pre-cocking and then right there. And again, as we're just talking about the hip mobility, all that stuff, but it was one of those things that as an athletic trainer, I noticed, is that something he did beforehand, or is that something he's doing to compensate for that elbow?
And at that level, that's easy to find out. Those guys can go back, give me his last five starts, and go, no, he hadn't done that before. You know, I mean, you can't do that here. It's not easy. It'd be somebody's cell phone, which will be at a bad angle, and you can't tell, you know.
So, all right, so we were continuing on with the exam, right, and kind of going through your normal routine.
It's all interrelated.
Yeah.
I don't think that posture is the end-all be-all. However, get your T-spine manipulated and like, oh, there it went. All right, you know, that pain's gone. So it's got a place. You know, there's extremes of everything. You know, that posture's the death of everybody on this one, and everybody else like, ah, posture doesn't matter at all, and I'm probably somewhere in the middle.
Yeah. But, yeah, then we'll have them throw that shoulder up or throw that arm up overhead and watch how the scapula moves, right? So for every that 2-to-1 ratio, you know, every 2 degrees of glenohumeral motion, we should get 1 degree of scapular motion. The other big thing I'd say we do, especially if it's a stronger kid, have them put a weight in their hand. So give them a 5-pound, 7-pound weight, then have them come up overhead. And that's really where we'll start to see the scapular dyskinesia, especially the winging. You know, 1 rep max, 5 pounds isn't a lot, but these pitchers, you know, they don't get injured in the first inning. It's always when they're fatigued, when the muscles are starting to wear out and having to overcompensate. That's the issue.
Right.
So we want to load them up and see if we get any winging there, you know, without them being fatigued.
Right. And I think that's a really important point to talk about that. But I think that's also where in your setting it's easier than in this setting, in that I can take your shirt off of you and look at that easier. I can't do that with a female in a high school setting.
Right.
You know, so – can we get them in a shirt maybe that's a little tighter to look at that back to be able to see what that scapula may be doing at the time? You know, if it's a female or somebody like that or somebody that's uncomfortable, you know, we can't go into a private room and look at these things in this setting. So it's a little tougher here, but it's still something. Get creative and figure out a way to look at that scapula. Or You may not be able to see the scapula, but you can kind of see how the motion goes and little hiccups and inflection or abduction and, you know, overhead and get an idea without being able to do that. But I think it's paramount to look at.
Right, yeah. And, you know, I would say even with a lot of the females in the clinic too, we just – the shirts stay on it and we just kind of poke around.
Right.
Yeah, have them raise into a position and then just kind of find our bony landmarks through the shirt. And then you can kind of, you know, hold your thumb out there while you step back and kind of observe. But then the other key to mention there too is when they're up overhead, that inferior angle should be all the way in the midline of the armpit. So that's another big thing to look at as far as is the shoulder blade, you know, abducting and upwardly rotating enough. So then after motion, we kind of look at muscle testing. I don't do just your standard MMT usually, just because if they're in pain and they're seeing me, it's going to be painful and weak, at least in some direction, if not all of them. I kind of do more of the Cyriac selective tissue tensioning technique, which is determining contractile versus non-contractile pathology, right? So if it's contractile, it's going to be painful with contraction and painful with stretch, whereas if it's non-contractile, it's going to be painful with contraction and then painful into the contraction direction of, so they wouldn't necessarily be stretched, if that makes sense. So like if we're talking about supraspinatus or infraspinatus, they're going to be painful rotated into IR where those muscles are getting stretched, and then external rotation is going to be painful upon contraction if I was just giving them an isometric. And so, or then like impingement, right? They may be painful with a isometric internal rotation, but then they're also going to be painful when passively rotated that way. So just kind of that, whether it's contractile muscle tendon unit or not. And that's a big differential diagnosis thing for me. And it's quick and easy, right? You don't have to get them in some specific position, make sure they're not compensating. You just have them in a neutral position, and then it's just an isometric, and you can match their strength. So it doesn't matter how strong they are, how weak they are. You're going to match it, and you're going to get an indication of muscle tendon unit or not.
All right, so real quick, on the Cyriacs, I've actually never heard of that. Cyriac selective tissue tensioning for contractile versus non-contractile. So go over that one more time. You said if it's contractile tissue,
so
then it's painful with contraction and stretch.
Right, so if we take our external rotators, right, if I have them isometrically push out into external rotation and that muscle tendon unit contracts, it's going to be painful. Then if I passively stretch it into internal rotation, so I move into internal rotation, I'm stretching the external rotators, you were going to get pain there as well. However, if they contract, say, external rotation, it's painful. I move into IR, it's not painful, but then I move into external rotation. I'm not ruling out muscle completely, right? But I'm also thinking it could be something else because they were painful passively in that direction when nothing was being contracted. Make sense?
Gotcha. Okay.
So that's kind of where it's not an end-all be-all, but it is definitely one way to kind of guide the next part of the exam. Which then, you know, from here we're moving on to joint play and instability, making sure the joint is stable before we even kind of start cranking on it. And that's where we get into that apprehension, relocation test, all that good stuff, just feeling the joint play of the glenohumeral joint itself. I know y'all hit on adhesive capsulitis last time, just knowing that capsular pattern as far as is the range limited in external abduction and then internal rotation.
So let me interrupt on this. What's the youngest adhesive capsulitis patient you've dealt with?
So not young at all. I actually haven't included a lot of adhesive capsulitis or even rotator cuff pathology, just because generally it's not going to be your athlete, your younger population that gets that.
They're going to have some other kind of issue.
But
that's why I asked, because you brought up the second point, which is rotator cuff. I used to be of the opinion that young 25, 30 years and down didn't get rotator cuff tears. That is no longer the case.
Right, definitely.
You know, I used to say, oh, okay, I'm looking at Jeremy. Jeremy isn't going to have a rotator cuff tear. He's 21 years old. Jeremy's 17 years old. He doesn't have a rotator cuff. Not anymore. As many innings as they're playing and all the other crap they do, you know, because you got to get your lessons in and dad's got to get you in the backyard to make sure he's getting his money's worth. We're getting tissues that look like 45-year-olds.
Right, right.
And so you can't – in my mind, I can no longer say it's not a rotator cuff. I've got to actually think rotator cuff at some point in this whole process. And that's why I brought up the adhesive capsulitis, because that is an older, quote-unquote, older person's injury.
Right, right.
You know, that's their pathology, not an 18-year-old. there could be a reason behind that, but it's typically going to be something else that's not related to orthopedics as to why they get that. But rotator cuff now is within our spectrum of high school students.
Yeah, and so, I mean, if we think about our stages of tendon pathology, right, the rotator cuff tear is just an overuse injury, and with, you know, sports specialization and playing one sport year-round, I mean, we're definitely going to start seeing that because these young kids are getting the reactive tendon. It's not being taken care of, so then it moves to the degenerative. As a teenager, you know, we should really only be seeing the reactive, get it calmed down, and then they don't move into that degenerative part, right? And, you know, us, we have the degenerative tendons just from years of previous sport and whatever we choose to do as we get older. There's no way around that. But yeah, they're moving through those stages pretty quick with how much they're playing one sport and overusing certain muscles. And
right, and it used to be, you know, Achilles tears in a high school kid meant they were on steroids. And that's not even the case anymore either because of this overuse specialization.
Right.
You know, I play AAU basketball. I play high school basketball. I'm on this league, and I do this, and I never rest. And, well, there you go.
Yeah, definitely. And then, so, yeah, once we kind of check the joint play, check the stability, you know, we there is the apprehension test, put them in 90-90 while they're supine. And then we can also see if that relocation test, you know, does it improve the pain? Another thing we can do with that apprehension test is we can actually start them down in a neutral shoulder position, externally rotate them to max, and then kind of take them through shoulder abduction, right? So we hit about 45 degrees, 90 degrees, and 120. Just a couple of notes with this. So we're not giving any kind of glide to the humerus. Getting pain around that 45-degree mark, we can be looking at like a Bankard or a Hill-Sachs lesion just from the position of the joint, right? We have that external rotation, which gives you a pretty good stress to that anterior labrum of the Bankard or the posterior humerus Hill-Sachs. And then at full 90, if you get complaints of like a posterior pain, so yeah, they may have that anterior glide. But if their pain's posterior, we may be looking at like more of a posterior impingement. So one test gives you quite a bit of information just by moving them through a range of motion. Then usually I would move on to like my rotator cuff cluster. So these tests are actually very specific. So they're meant to rule in the pathology. For the supraspinatus, infraspinatus, and teres minor, we're just looking at our ER lag, our drop sign, and then our horn blowers. So horn blowers, I think, is a little different the way I was taught. We're actually, when they're in that 90-90 position, or excuse me, they're in scaption, but 90 degrees of external rotation, you're going to have them resist external. And so kind of a pretty good weakness there, inability to resist kind of an external load, shows that teres minor tear there. And then for IR, we use the liftoff or the IR lag.
Right.
Older population, they usually can't get to this position if they're painful, so we can also use the belly press. But then the key here is, you know, you have to make sure they're actually rotating the shoulder and not just extending it. That's kind of a big one, especially in our throwers too, right? If they may not have the internal rotation to internally rotate off their back, that may be the best stretch they get all day. So they could just be extending their shoulder as well. And then, as you were saying, the big cluster, if we're thinking rotator cuff, we're looking at over 60 night pain, and then a positive empty can. So none of these tests that I even listed is our indicator for rotator cuff tear. For our less than 60-year-olds, we're looking at any kind of mechanism of injury. So any kind of traction, compression, anything like that is what would key us into it. But like Bubba was saying, you know, we have to check this out now with all these overuse injuries. So then moving on, we'll talk about the labrum a little bit.
Before we get to the labrum, do you try to differentiate with your testing between, you know, any of the four rotator cuff muscles to figure out, hey, maybe they've got a tear here? I don't really care. I think a tear is a tear because it's all conjoined tendon in the end.
Right.
So, you know, if I've torn one, I've torn them all. In essence, they don't work, you know. And so maybe some have a little better function than others, but you're done. You know, I mean, so I don't really go, I know we're weak here, or this one's here, but realistically, that could be the one that's taking the brunt because it's the only one really functioning, that where the, you know, your tears in another area of that tendon complex. So to me, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, and, you know, listing off the test, it sounds like a lot, but in the eval, it only takes 30 seconds, right, because it moves from least intense to most intense.
Right.
Of just that scaption, we're going to go 20 degrees, let go of them. Can they hold there? Good. 90 degrees, can they hold there? Good. All right, resist. They can resist. Good. We're good to go, you know.
Right.
That's
way down the list now of worry again. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not necessarily which tendon is torn. It's more of just increasing the intensity and seeing if they can handle the load. You know, if they do have a pretty significant tear, you throw them up with the resisted external rotation. You know, that'll probably send them off the table and you'll never see them again.
Right.
So
I don't want to work with this guy.
Right, yeah. And so then moving to the labrum, probably the most complicated and controversial of the tests. I guess the initial study came out saying that the O'Brien test, you know, was specific, like 95 to 100% specific and sensitive. And then that's obviously been challenged because those numbers are better than the actual MRI gold standard right now. The big thing that I'm seeing is you, depending on what the patient's mechanism of injury is, that's kind of the route you choose. So if we're talking about like a fall on an outstretched arm, some kind of compression injury, we're looking at more like the crank, the clunk, and the jerk test, you know, getting some compression through the joint that kind of mimics the injury, and then rotating through the joint, seeing if we get those mechanical symptoms or reproduction of pain. And then for our overhead thrower, we're looking more at that peel back phenomenon of the long head of the biceps on the labrum. So our biceps load, our 1 and 2, the pronated load. And then a couple tests that I also use is the bear hug and the uppercut. Those are actually really sensitive, so they're used to rule out biceps pathology within the shoulder. Also kind of helpful with the labrum because, yeah, they may still have a labrum tear, but it's not so significant to include the biceps.
I think the hardest thing with the labrum is unless they're chronic, there's a lot of guarding. So they kind of learn, all right, I'm not doing this because that hurts. And so you start trying to do things, they're like, nope. And so you can't necessarily get a good test on some of them. And that's where you've got to go cycle back to that history and maybe dig down a little deeper and go, why can't I get them here? All right, hang on. Did you dive for a? Well, yeah, I did. Okay, now here we go. You know, the history becomes, especially in Bankart's or you know, labral pathology to me is really important. Again, I can't hit the strike zone. I've lost velocity. You know, I don't know where it's going. I hit the bull. You know, whatever it is. I dove for a ball. All right. Well, that, you know, that tells me a lot. But then if you didn't get any of that and you're getting to that point, you're like, why are they so guarded right now? You know, I mean, it's pretty, in my opinion, it's pretty easy to see once you've seen it once or twice. You're like, okay, there it is. I got to go back and ask some more history questions.
Yeah, definitely. And then I do have another little note on here. One thing that's been studied, right? So we have the two camps. We have the peel back phenomenon camp that's saying we have to load the bicep to see if that labrum's torn, and then the other one is all based on mechanical symptoms.
I'm peel back guy.
All right, so I don't even know what peel back means, or at least I don't know that terminology. So.
I've tried to devise a model to make it make sense. Take a paper clip at the curve. If I'm taking a paper clip and I'm doing this, it's going to break at the curve, right? That's kind of a peel back. The more I do this with a load, is that biceps comes up, it's stressing right there at that attachment, and just kind of, if you were able to go see a shoulder scope and let them get them back here with the scope in, and they had like a slap, you could see it right there at that biceps attachment just peeling away from there. In essence, it's what it's doing.
Okay, I got you. I'm following you now.
It's just, I can't figure out a good way to make, I've literally tried to make a model to make that make sense, and I can't figure out a good way to do it. No, wrong kind of model. You're the guy we're not getting his shirt off to do any kind of testing on him, on that too. So,
all right, continuing on.
But yeah, so there's actually a study that came out with the O'Brien test and then the modified DLS, which uses a combination of the peel back and the mechanical symptoms. So positives on both of those have come out to be 95% ruling in a labral tear if both are positive. So just kind of the jury is out on the labrum tests. One test isn't going to do it for you. You need to run through a few of these and pretty much get multiple positives before you can really call it a labrum.
In your practice, I know at one point the mode of thinking was go fix any first-time shoulder dislocation because they said that the odds of it happening a second time were pretty high. Mm-hmm. You dislocate your shoulder, you're going to have a labral tear. Let's go fix it. Are you seeing that in your practice where, hey, I dislocated my shoulder and I'm getting it fixed? Or is it dependent upon time of year, season, sport, you know, those things? I mean, or have you even paid attention to that?
So I would say I haven't really dealt with a lot of shoulder dislocations. Now, I've heard people say they've had them. But we aren't seeing a lot of the repairs or the capsule
right.
shrink wrap,
right.
per se. Not seeing a lot of those just because they shrink that capsule down to tighten everything down, but
and
then they
fails.
Lose all their mobility. Yeah, it's just not a right. great surgery when it comes to success. So we're not seeing a lot of those, but a lot of people, you know, they will say, yeah, my shoulder pops in and out, but these also aren't our high-level athletes either, or even our high school athletes. These are just kind of the lay person, weekend warrior, and they just kind of deal with it as it comes.
Yeah.
So now, we're talking about the patella, whole different story, you know, as far as how often those get operated on versus not.
Right. But, well, and now it's, can you visualize the MPFL on MRI? And do you even know what you're looking for when you're looking at that on MRI? There's a whole nother, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's a whole nother month-long series just on that.
Right. So we kind of get the labrum out, we get the rotator cuff out. Next thing we're thinking is impingement, right? That kind of catch-all term. And like I said, this is one of my favorites. It's I think this is kind of our bread and butter, not being physicians, right? Everything else, rotator cuff tear, labral tear. Yeah, they'll try conservative, but with our athletes, most of the time those are going to go get repaired. And then, you know, here comes the just return to sport. But impingement, right there, there's tissue-wise, everything's pretty well intact. Just that acute inflammation, we're getting that compression of the tendons as we move. We get flared up, and we just got to calm it back down and then strengthen the right muscles, right? So first thing I'm looking at is the scapular retraction test. This is one of those ones I didn't even realize that it had a name. It's just something that I do, and Marcus talked about it last week, where they're forward flexing the arm, it's painful, get that anterior pain, so then they come back down, relax, adduct, and slightly upward rotate the scapula manually. As they flex, I just let the scapula kind of move how it wants to. Usually we're going to see more motion, less pain, and that's the moment they buy into rehab, right? Because they were able to fully flex without any pain. And then you get to tell them, right, it's just your shoulder blade, it's how it's moving. We just have this muscle imbalance between the front and back, and then, you know, they're like putty in your hands. They'll believe every word you say. So other things to look for as far as tests, we've got the painful arc, just that 60 to 120 degrees, that's going to be painful throughout there. That's general, so we can't really hang our hat on that. But then if we're looking at like the Hawkins Kennedy near, those are also sensitive. So pretty much negatives rule them out. But if we have this kind of cluster of painful arc, Hawkins Kennedy near, all of those are positive. Pretty good indicator we're working with impingement.
Yeah, crappy scapula. Yeah. Crappy scapula is almost synonymous with shoulder pain. So
right, yeah. So, you know, that's the other big indicator is what's that shoulder or scapular dyskinesia that we found, you know, first thing in the eval when we were looking at range and resting position and all that good stuff. That's kind of your guide to impingement. One test that I wanted to note was, especially if they're really painful, won't let you touch them or anything, it's called the Yoakum test. just having them cross their arm to their opposite shoulder and try to raise their elbow up to their forehead. That is the best impingement test, because you're going to get impingement without having to touch them. They're not going to be worried about you poking on them, pushing on them, and they're going to be like, yeah, that's painful right here in the front.
It's also a great AC joint test.
Yeah, yeah. And then that's my next point, right, is that we're moving on to the AC. So that Hawkins-Kennedy test or horizontal adduction, you know, we're going to get that anterior pain. Well, then is it impingement or is it AC? So then when they're there in that horizontal adduction, just having them resist, right? So that's going to be the horizontal abduction test. But then, yeah, so for the AC, right, then we're just having them resist from a adducted position, resist back. And so let's see, if it hurts worse to resist, we're looking kind of at that AC because we're compressing the AC joint. But if it actually feels kind of better to resist, that's when we're looking at the impingement, because as they try to move out of that position, we're going to actually release that impingement there. And then another easy one, of course, if it's an acute injury, make sure you check the continuity of the clavicle and AC, or in the scapular spine. But then the Paxinos sign, so just giving some compression in the front to back there of the acromion and shearing that joint. If that's painful, again, we're looking more at an AC.
Long time. How much of a role do you think the SC joint plays in some of this? I think it's overlooked.
So, yeah.
Well, let me rephrase it. It's never looked at.
Right, yeah.
Never say never, but it's never looked at.
Right.
I think personally it plays a role. I don't know how big of a role. I've actually had, you want to talk about weird shoulder stuff, I've actually had a baseball catcher that had a hypermobile SC joint.
Okay.
And when I worked for Dr. Lowe, we had one that was actually posteriorly displaced that he had to surgically. Now, that's got its own set of issues with
right.
it because of the stuff behind it. But I don't think it's – I will say myself, I never went there looking for stuff, but I think it's something we ought to just give a glance at. How stable is it? How painful mm-hmm. is it? You know, how mobile is it? Okay, moving on.
Yeah, and so kind of when you evaluate the T-spine too, right, the ribs are there. That first rib, second rib can really be big players. And even if you're kind of poking on the ribs, whether on the sides or the back, if we start getting any kind of pain, like sometimes you'll poke on their back and they'll be like, that hurt in the front. You know, that kind of leads you into that rib dysfunction, which can kind of lead you over to the SC joint. I can't say I've actually, you know, generally assess it day one, but that's one of those things that if we right, it's a big puzzle. If we're working and we don't see any change or anything, or we get the symptoms to kind of, we're chasing the symptoms around, or they have that lack of full motion and we just can't get there, then yeah, that SC joint's something we definitely would want to take a look at.
Yeah, and you know, you kind of mentioned the integrity of the clavicle, and I think we kind of stop mid-clavicle because that's like, all right, that's where the clavicle fractures go to,
right.
and we need to go all the way.
Well, yeah.
You know,
so
we need to go all the way medial to that joint and look at that. It's just a matter of, you know, again, it's not high on our priority list. It's probably buried under a couple things we'll never do.
Yeah, and I would say clavicular fracture, you know, that's probably the one time that I'm 100% gonna check that joint, give it a little Moeb, see if it's moving, see if it's tight, just because, you know, there's already been a disruption,
right?
You know, between the SC joint and the AC joint. But when they come in with just generalized shoulder pain, I can't say I really look at it a whole lot. Just because there's so much other things to cover.
Right, but you kind of start going, you tender here? No, but we never go here.
Right,
you know, we
yeah.
go, okay,
yeah.
How about over here? Nothing, no. Well, you know, maybe if this sucker's hypermobile, we know.
Right, yeah.
You know, but we just don't get there. Just one of those things that just popped up in my head. I'll leave it at that.
No, definitely. Definitely something to think about every time you're looking at a shoulder, right? Because that is definitely one of the joints that plays a part. If that SC joint isn't moving, we're going to be stuck at about 120 degrees of flexion. So that posterior roll is required to get full overhead flexion.
So I wonder what the loads on that joint are with somebody that benches heavy. Jeremy, we're going to find out. You're going to guinea pig this.
All right, well, how are you going to test it?
I'm figuring that out right now.
You're going to stick some needles in there?
Well, I'm thinking that's the best way to do it on you. Yeah. So.
All right, sounds good. Let's do it.
We'll live stream it so you can see me. You know, let me tell you, I am not ashamed. I pass out. I passed out multiple times when I've had blood drawn. So if you stick a needle in me.
But you're going to be laying on the bench, so it'll be okay. You're not going to fall at least.
But if I'm benching heavy, then. So just yeah, saying.
We'll get you a couple of kids that don't like you to spot.
All right. It's all right. So I always use those little T-bar things, whatever they are, the protectors. Anyways.
And we're going to drop them one notch low.
We have digressed. What else you got, Mike?
We did not.
So just some other factors to think about. I know last time y'all touched on the cervical component, the thoracic outlet. We've hit thoracic mobility pretty hard. Hip mobility, we even touched on that earlier. And then some the things to think about as far as our sport-specific adaptations, right? Our swimmers, their shoulder blades are never going to be in perfect position. They're always going to be abducted and internally rotated. That's not necessarily something we want to fix. But as if they have, right, if they start getting pain and they do start to get some pathology, then we have to work on it a little bit, kind of strengthen up some of the weaker muscles. But again, we're not looking to change their overall mobility because that's something their body has adapted to be a swimmer. Just some other common ones in softball pitchers, we're going to see a little bit of a elbow flexion contracture. We don't want to straighten that elbow out because that's where they're generating all their force from, or quite a bit of it. And then we'll also start to see some flattened out T-spines, so they won't be as kyphotic as we would like. Again, that's just spending so much time in extension. And then a little more rare, so more in like tennis players and then overhead throwers, we'll start to see a little bit of a torsion. So if you're playing around in the T-spine, kind of looking at accessory motion, it may seem like they're a little twisted, and that's probably because they are. That's just the way their body has developed through years of playing sport, and not necessarily anything pathological or contributing to the pathology. That's just how they are. We don't need to try to go and fix all that.
You know, that's a good comment to say, I found something wrong, I got to fix it. Well, no. By fixing it, you may actually, their function and skill set may decrease because right. of that. And so, again, it's not just a history. It's understanding the sport, understanding the position that they play. We'll tell you, yeah, we better leave that alone. That's a normal abnormal for them.
Right.
You know,
right.
So.
Yeah, and that's the GERD argument, right? You know, right. We don't need to go fix their internal rotation that's lacking because that's their normal to play that sport. So.
Right. Yeah, you want to look at some jacked up elbows, go look at bull riders and bareback riders. You know, they're like, I'm good, and it looks like just it's all one size.
Right.
All right, so we talked about doing the evaluation, and obviously if you're looking at Dragonfly Max, I've been playing around with it. One of the cool things they have inside of there is you can actually dictate your soap notes, so you can, I guess, voice type your things while you're doing this. Say, hey, Google, type this, which my phone's probably going to mess up now. so if you say, or if you say Alexa, whatever, but in Dragonfly you can do that and say, okay, well, internal rotation deficit or the Yoakum test indicates lack of range of motion or pain as he gets his elbow close to his forehead. It just makes it easier for you to document because, as I was telling Mike, there's a lot of athletic trainers who are not very good at documenting all of their findings, and I admit I am one of those because, as I was saying, I'm evaluating one kid, another kid trying to figure out how to sign in, another kid that's bleeding, another kid that needs this and this. And so at one time I got all this going on, and you just go from one to the next, to the next, to the next. And then you just keep doing that all day.
Have you had Dragonfly open this whole time?
No.
Okay. Cause I was going to say, is that how you remembered the Syriax test? Cause I was thinking it might've been dictated.
No, actually Mike typed in great show notes, which could be found at sportsmedicinebroadcast.com shoulder evaluation.
How did he remember that?
No, because I saw that earlier when he typed it in. I was like, I've never heard of that, but I'm not going to Google it or ask him now because I'm going to wait.
You should have put the phonetic spelling on there for him, too, but, you know.
All right, so in just a second, I'm going to ask you how somebody can get a hold of you, Mike. But I do want to give a shout-out to the people watching us live, Johnny Vincent, Stephanie Moss, Stacey Havner, John Harass, Sean Reedy,
hey, Sean.
Reedy, and Everett Boutwell. Again, I'm sure there's other people jumping in and out. It's kind of how it works with the Facebook or the YouTube live stream. So
at least the computer didn't crash.
Yeah, this time. Right.
But apparently, I don't know, that mic doesn't like me. Maybe it's the Methodist people it doesn't like. Is that what it is?
Maybe. Yeah, you got us behind the
sign.
Behind the wrong sign here.
Okay. All right. So if you want to get a hold of Bubba, you can find him on Twitter or, again, just anywhere on sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. You can search for Bubba Wilson. But, Mike, on there I have your email. Is that what you would like to give people?
Yeah. So email is probably the easiest way to get a hold of me, at least Monday through Friday. I can't say that I check it on the weekends. But, yeah, email is probably the best.
All right, and so, again, I have that on the show notes. It's mchamberlain@houstonmethodist.org, mchamberlain@houstonmethodist.org. If you want to email him, again, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/shoulder-evaluation. We'll have that link there and a link to Bubba, and obviously you know how to get a hold of me. If you're going to point somebody to one spot to find out more or to improve their shoulder evaluation skills, where is that going to be, Mike?
Who?
Bubba?
If you want a good person to follow about the shoulder, Mike Reinhold.
Mike Reinhold?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So you can find him on Twitter.
He has a lot of stuff. You can actually go to his website, and he'll send like it's like every week he sends he'll do a little podcast, but send some notes, different things, and he'll have some guest contributors. He'll talk about shoulder eval or this test or this exercise and really good stuff.
I would say, for me, one guy that I look at a lot, especially in evidence, he does a lot of stuff on, I think, Instagram and Twitter, is going to be Kevin Wilk.
Yep.
Kevin
and Mike are almost one of the same.
Are they? Yeah. He does quite a bit. I actually get a lot of my higher level plyometric exercises from him because he's just constantly coming up with new stuff to challenge that posterior cuff, middle trap, lower trap, and get these guys back to sport. So.
All right, so I'm going to have to check out Kevin Wilk and get some of that posterior cuff exercises and hopefully reduce my shoulder pain thanks to my expert evaluation by Mike. So, again, check out Dragonfly Max, some of the cool features inside of there as you're working on improving your documentation, which helps you add value and demonstrate your value as an athletic trainer. This
also
is
also CYA, but anyway.
Yeah, yeah, also CYA. But hey, but you can't tell people you got a CYA. You got to tell them how it benefits them, how it's going to get them more money or
okay, CYA is not a benefit.
Right? But yeah, but well, that's like telling your kid, I was at the doctor's office yesterday. Get over here. 1, 2. Well, the kid already knows. He's pushing limits, right? But hey, buddy, can you please come over here? Or look, hey, I got something for you over here. Oh yeah, sure, Mom. You know, it changes things. You got to put the perspective. You got to work on your parenting skills. That's what happens
when
you're
done. Mine's 21, man.
Bubba, this is way too long. Mike has got to go. He is trying to kick you under the table. So, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/shoulder-evaluation. Jeremy, Mike, Bubba, that is a wrap.